All right, another week gone by, another episode ready to go. Tall Tales of Taylor Jones. It's a podcast with me and my friends catching up, because I noticed something about myself. I'm very lazy when it comes to picking up the phone and dialing the numbers. I'm good at getting on the phone and surfing the internet, but I'm not good about picking up the phone and dialing the numbers and actually calling my friends and booking lunch and catching up and just, you know, hearing their story and all that. And so this podcast is a way for to hold me accountable to such things and call my friends on the phone and catch up with them. And then if they want to record a conversation, we can. If not, we're good. Doesn't matter. But occasionally people say yes. And that's what this podcast is. It's, you know, mostly independent musicians out here working for a living and telling their stories. And that's what we're going to have today. So that's what I am. I'm a independent musician who's trying to make a living in the music industry, and also an Uber driver, and also a grass cutter, and a flea market hustler, a Craigslist salesman. We do all these things to get it going. And yeah, so this is my fun thing that I get to do to catch up my friends and hear how they're doing it and get inspired by their stories. I'm excited about today's show. We'll get all into, you know, the finer points of buying a house on a musician life. And you'll learn all about that, people. It's not as simple as turning your W-2s for the last 10 years and buy a house. Come to find out. So anyway, what's been going on with me here? Not a whole lot. Getting ready for this Gray Havens tour that we're going to do in the fall. And I'm learning the songs from Ghost of a King. If you haven't heard that record, it's pretty unique to today's stuff, I think. It's very like the stuff I grew up on in the 70s, where it's very themed out, almost like a rock opera or something, in that it continues on with the Ghost of a King, you know, subject matter the whole time. And I really enjoy the challenge. It has been challenging, though, to learn all these songs, because I'm basically a 2 and 4 guy. So if the groove is like, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4, and it just goes and repeats itself, like that's what I do. That's what I'm comfortable with. But on this record, it's a lot more sort of orchestral, and you got to pick your spots and you got to remember all your spots, because there's a lot of times where the drums are out. And you know what I'm saying? It's challenging for your old boy who really ain't trying to do nothing but play the groove to, you know, what's that song I like? Best of My Love from the 70s, that disco song. I love that groove. That groove's money. So anyway, I'm excited for that. Rehearsals start tomorrow or the next day. Is today Wednesday? Tuesday. The rehearsals start on Thursday. So, but enough of that. Has there been any funny Uber stories as of late? I do have one funny Uber story for this week. I picked up a guy who had just got out of prison the other day, and he hadn't been out of prison for very long. And where I'm from, I know what these people look like. He had a tattooed tear on his eye, underneath his eye right here, which, as far as I know, symbolizes some sort of a crime that you committed in the past that might involve somebody's life ending. But I don't know for that to be fact or for rumor. But this guy was, you know, there's people that are hard, and then there's people that are like hard. And this guy was hard. And he had, you know, the look on his face, like you could literally, this guy was like made of stone. He was a little skinny guy or whatever. But we talked all the way from Lenox Village to East Nashville, all the way there. And his girlfriend was in the back. And it didn't take no time for him to be like, I spent some time in prison. And I was like, yeah, I know. I could tell. No, you didn't have to tell me. I know you did. He had the tattoos, and he was working a job. He remodels houses. That's what he's always done. And he's been doing it for 20 years. And he's made legitimate money. And he told me about back in the 90s after Hurricane Ivan or something like that, how he went.
Nashville?
Huh?
Over in East Nashville?
No, this is in Florida. Okay. Hurricane Ivan.
I don't know.
No, he went to Florida to do work over some stuff. And he said he made $186,000 that year just working remodeling houses. And he's like, man, I turned that stuff into my tax lady. I couldn't believe I made that much money. And then I couldn't believe I spent all that money. Oh, man. He goes, man, you wouldn't believe it, man. All these cruises to Jamaica, Mexico, we would just take them. Just right out the gate in Florida. He said, we were taking helicopter rides to places. We were just doing everything. And, you know, on and on and on from there. But then he got locked up. He said, most recently I was locked up for 5 years, from 2010 to 2015. And so I got to ask him, I was like, so what was all different about when you got out? And he was kind of smiling. He goes, man, downtown. He's like, I couldn't believe it. Talking about downtown Nashville. Yeah. He said, I came back and everything was different, man. It was just like all these buildings were up. The Music City Center was all of a sudden there. I was like, I had to be shock value number one coming out. But he got out, you know, went right back to work, you know, got that hustle. So all I have to say, like, you know, here's a guy who's got felonies and who knows what, but he's still out there working and making a decent living because he knows how to hustle. And legit, I mean, he was sweaty. He was dirty. He had stuff all over him from working in that house. Was working 12-hour days or whatever, but he was doing his thing. So it was a crazy experience. I haven't ever – and it was like a podcast conversation. I literally was interviewing a guy on the way. He didn't know it. I wish I could have – and honestly, I was really – I wish I could have recorded a conversation. But I was. I asked him – and I kept waiting for him to get upset with something I asked him, but he never really did. So
that's good.
It was crazy. He said, man – I said, so tell me about prison, like do you have to fight in prison? He goes, oh, they're going to test your heart. That's going to happen. They're going to find out if you got any heart or not. He said, but when I was in there, he said, I was looking to kill anything that moved. He's like, that's how I approached it. He said, I was going to fight anybody, and anybody that tests me, I was going to fight them to the death. He said, nobody ever bothered me. He said, after that, he said, they understood that I was just there to do my time, stay in my lane and get out of there. But I said, dang, man. He said, if you ain't got no heart, you ain't going to make it in prison. They're just going to run over you the whole time. But I didn't know this, too. I was thinking he was, like, prison in, like, West Nashville. But he's like, no, he was in, like, some crazy Tipton County or somewhere like that, like, out in the middle of no place, which that would drive me crazy, be out in the country that far away from everything and in prison. So it was bad. But you know what I'm saying? Maybe he straightened up. He's like, get off parole in 5 months. Yeah, so it was interesting. I hope I didn't put that guy on blast. If you're listening to this podcast, sir, with all due respect, come on the show one time. I'd love to hear your story. That'd be awesome. But I'm excited about today. I'm out here in Jenny and Tyler's brand new house in Nashville and welcoming them on the show right now. My running mates from way back.
Hey, Taylor.
Hey, buddy.
Thanks.
Well, thanks for coming on, both of y'all. See, it's a treat. Usually I can only fit one in the podcast because I ain't got but two inputs on my gimmick over here. But today, because they're so close and married and in their house, we can work on this one microphone.
Yeah, we've shared a few microphones in the past.
Yes, we have.
Awesome. So the house is awesome. Is that nice?
Man. Yeah. It's so good. It's so good. Do you want?
We love it.
Yeah. What's it like to be a homeowner?
It feels like it's just a bit more responsibility than renting. You know, we didn't want to ever leave our rental place. Would we rent like 7 places before we got a place? We didn't ever want to leave them in bad shape, but there's some things that you look for in a house and you feel like, oh man, if I don't take care of this, something bad could happen. So it's just a little bit more responsibility. It also feels like we are rooted more. We have, we literally have ownership in the neighborhood. And so it feels like let's get to know our neighbors better. And,
okay.
You know, get to be, I don't know, more purposeful and just deliberate with how we get to know our neighbors. So it's kind of cool. That's a good aspect of it. This neighborhood is a really quiet neighborhood. So it's actually interesting. We haven't gotten to know all that many neighbors yet, but the people we have gotten to know are, we're just excited to get to know them even more.
Well, cool, man. Yeah. So I believe you guys were buying it in April and we were together, right?
Yeah, it happened so quickly, man. We got our taxes done in March and we put an offer on this house about 6 days later, and then we counter offered and we had the place 2 days after that. So all within 8 days, We had taxes done, mortgage pre-approved. And
we put the offer in like the same day that we left for a tour. Like we saw it in the morning and then we left in the afternoon.
Yep.
It was crazy.
So, because I remember fast. When we were like, you know, first talking about this, y'all aren't even like, I didn't even know you were looking for a house. And then all of a sudden it's like, oh, we're buying a house.
We didn't know either. Because previously we'd been approved like 3 years ago or 3 or 4 years ago. With pretty much the same income, I don't understand, for like $70,000 maximum. And that was like pushing it to the edge. And we thought, man, we can't get a house for $70,000. We could get a lot for $70,000.
Yeah.
But we wouldn't have the money to build or anything. So we pretty much gave up on that idea of ever being able to buy a house until we met this guy who works with artists, a mortgage lender. Who works with artists, and he looked at our taxes and was like, man, I can approve you for $170,000. And so we were like, man, that's we can get a house with that.
Right.
And we'd been paying, our rent was $1,050. Our mortgage now is like $880.
Mm.
So we're actually paying less per month, and it's a better space, and we're putting it towards something that counts, you know?
No, absolutely.
So it was crazy. It was such a crazy fast gift from God, really, that we were not expecting, and that I think we're kind of still processing it. We've been here. Oh, sorry about that, Tampa, Florida. Sorry, Tay Tay. Anyway, yeah, we're still processing it, man. And we've been here for about a month now. We had a month in between being on the road. And, I don't know. It feels great to be home.
Mm-hmm. I concur.
So I remember when you guys were, the way we first met, we can back it up there is, I believe we met at Centennial Park at the, Musician's Corner, perhaps first season of that.
Yeah.
And, I don't remember who we were seeing. Maybe y'all remember who we were seeing.
I think you guys were playing with Erica.
With Erica. Chambers. Okay, yeah, that's what it was. Okay, yeah. And Erica was, man, I need to interview her, but she really was like a real friend.
Yeah.
I mean, really, really, really took care of me and my brother when, you know, we were a lot younger, didn't really have anybody with any wisdom watching over us much, and she was awesome for that. So whenever we got to do that with her, that was a lot of fun. But, and then you come find out y'all live right down the street.
Yeah.
So how is that even? So how long did you live in that area before we met you and all that?
I want to say like a year and a half we were there. We rented an apartment in my brother's basement, which was awesome.
It looked cool down there.
Yeah, it was small, but I feel like that's part of the way we've been able to make it as musicians is just kind of being creative with where we live, living with people. We've done that a couple of times. It's just helpful. I mean, like that neighborhood. That was cool.
Yeah. It's like, I don't know. I used to think about it like, well, we're gone all the time, so we're not really actually here. Mm-hmm. So you can put up with a lot more when you're like, well, I'm only here like 50% of the time or less. Yeah. So while I'm here, I just need somewhere to sleep.
Yeah.
And put my stuff. And it's whatever.
Yeah.
So that sort of approach. But as we get a little older, marriages, kids, it's like, uh-oh, we got to do this legit now.
Yeah, we had to move out of that space mostly. Well, they moved out of the house, so that was part of it. But we were having Jane, and I think that even if we'd stayed, probably within a couple of months of having Jane, we would have been like, we probably need to get out of here. So, yeah.
Well, y'all made the best of it. You made us pancakes, and we're forever grateful.
I remember that, yeah.
That was good stuff. So let's go back in time. And how did you guys meet?
We met at the University of Delaware.
Oh, I love Delaware now.
Yes. Delaware.
Been to Delaware twice. Okay. Yeah.
You guys have played there.
Well,
right?
My friends have work at a church up there. And it's in, up right next to Maryland.
Okay.
So right near the bay. It's great. I forget what, like near Smyrna, Delaware.
Okay.
So great church, great town. Yeah, I loved it up there. Still do. So I know why you have such an affinity for Delaware now.
Yeah. So yeah, we met at UD. We met on a bus. that was taking students from campus to a local church. It was my first weekend at school. Tyler's a year older than me, and I thought he was awesome. I thought he was super attractive, and as a very shy person, it was cool to see Tyler be so outgoing, and it seemed like people were really drawn to him, and there was something about that that was just so different from me, and I found that to be very intriguing, and I got involved with the Baptist Student Ministry, which was what Tyler was a part of, and we started playing music and leading worship and writing, and we would hang out at the student center in the stairwells and play music because the acoustics were awesome. And I was in an a cappella group, and Tyler worked at the student center, so after he got off his shift, he'd come like pick me up kind of from my a cappella rehearsal, which was super fun. And through playing and hanging out all the time, we just became more than friends and started playing like around town a lot together, just backing each other up. I was Jenny Apple at the time. Tyler was still Tyler Summers. But he would play guitar for me and I would kind of sing for him. And so it naturally became like this duo thing. And we played like every Starbucks in Delaware.
Okay.
And lots of bars, and it was fun. It was a cool way to get to know each other. And we came to Nashville actually in the summer of 2006.
Mm.
And Tyler just wanted to like get to know the town. And I'd been here before.
10 years ago.
That's 10 years ago.
Woo.
That makes me feel so old. We were still in school. It was like between my junior and senior year or sophomore and junior year. Yeah, Tyler's junior and senior year. And when we came, Tyler wanted to do some recording. My dad let me come down here. It was crazy. At first, he was like, no, you can't go down there with your boyfriend. And I was like, this sucks. And looking back, I'm like, I can't believe he eventually like let me go. That's ridiculous.
Yeah.
But it was amazing because I got a job at a Thousand Faces. Sure.
There's a story behind Jenny's dad letting her come down here.
We got to paint his character out, Mr. Air Force.
So Air Force guy. I think at that point in his Air Force career, it had more flight hours than any pilot of C-130s or something. And he's stationed at Andrews, which is one of the ones closest to DC, so a lot of political people fly out of that. And anyway, he's doing well in his career, and he loves his daughter very much, and was right to like immediately say no when she asked. But then
I was bummed about it, but I was also kind of like totally fine with it, like at peace about it.
Yeah. So he was driving home from a shift at Andrews Air Force Base, and I think it was like a 45-minute commute or something, and he got he just felt like God kind of like spoke to him, like not audibly, I guess, but he felt like God was saying, just let her go to Nashville. And it was 3 days later that I picked Jenny up, and we went to a pancake pantry and as a celebration for her coming to town. And right next to Pancake Pantry is this job that she ended up getting. And so A Thousand Faces is the name of the shop. It's still there. That kind of supported us for,
well,
she worked there that summer.
I worked there that summer. And then when we moved back to Nashville, they gave me a full-time job.
Yeah.
Which was crazy. And with my dad, that story is even crazier in the sense that, like, he paid for my plane ticket to come down here. Like, not only was he just like, you can go, he, like, got me here.
Yeah.
And it was during that summer that we recorded our first record.
Yep.
And Tyler had planned on doing some recording. And he was like, well, I've got 5 good songs. And I was like, I got 5 good songs. So let's just make a record together. And that was kind of when we became like an official
Yeah.
Duo. Without even really.
We got free studio time at Dark Horse Studio.
Yeah, through an intern.
Yep.
It was crazy. It was awesome.
Like, it was really sweet. Yeah. How things were just lining up.
I didn't know that part. And like, see, that's why I love this crazy podcast idea, is because you got to go deeper than regular conversations. And we've been up and down the road a little bit now, and it's like, I didn't even know that far in.
Yeah.
So the whole your dad thing, like, that's pretty interesting, because I met him and I wouldn't cross him. You know what I mean? He's very, you know, he's a very respected man.
Yeah.
Everywhere
for sure.
He goes, like when he walks in the room, he just commands it, you know, in a nice way. But, you know, he's. Anybody military for me is worthy of respect, you know? So it was, we stayed at his house and it was pretty awesome. So, so you come to Nashville, you make your first record, and then it's like, you already have a cool name, Jenny and Tyler. Like that's half the battle anymore. Like let's be honest, like there's some crappy band names out there. So
wow.
A cool band.
We thought long and hard about what, like a band name. And we couldn't come up with anything.
It's one of the hardest things to do.
Yeah. You guys had the Vespers is a great band name. Yeah.
Phoebe just had it in her pocket, though.
Yeah, the Vespers is way cooler than Jenny and Tyler.
I don't know. It's definitely looks good on a poster. Jenny and Tyler looks good on a poster. Here's a band name we're supposed to do. It's supposed to look good on a poster, be easy to remember, and kind of sum up what you do. And that's really it. If it can do that, then you're good. Yeah. You know? And y'all
does that.
It's functional. It's perfect, you know?
Yeah,
and if it's hooky and nice and whatever, need to breathe or switch foot or that's cool.
Yeah,
you know.
Yep.
But rule number one, you can't be called the Jabrones and it look like crap on a piece of paper and not explain well what you do and not be memorable either. Like I find the hardest thing is like, what's that band called again? Whereas like when you hear the name Need to Breathe, like first time you heard that, you're like, oh, I got that.
Yeah,
you know. So band names are hard.
You just used Jabrones, which we actually found out what that meant while we were on tour with Taylor. Taylor's into wrestling, like pro wrestling and like kind of amateur,
anything,
right?
Anything that's athletic, I'm usually into it.
Yeah,
if it's competitive.
But they're the guy that didn't you say the guy that is the fall guy?
Like yeah,
is the Jabroni
pretty much?
Is that's just, what he's called?
It comes from the
Jabrone for short.
Yeah, it comes from the okay. So. First of all, no disrespect to any of these guys because it's a job that they do and they do it well. But somebody has to lose.
Right.
Okay. Well, that's called doing the job or doing the favors. So Jabroni is like a carny term.
Okay.
So carny slang for all you do is jobs.
You're doing the job.
So if somebody is a jobber, that's all they do, then all the reason they're there for is to lose matches and for somebody to get a win over them. There is a certain group of guys that's all they do. On TV,
it's like Daredevil's dad.
Yeah, exactly. So that's just one of my many wrestling terms that sneaks into the vocabulary that I kind of teach people. What do you call that when you do it under the table? Anyway, subconsciously teach people wrestling terms.
Yeah,
mostly because it's funny. But I thought it was funny because The Rock used to call people jabronis, and that used to make me laugh because I had no idea what it meant. You jabroni?
Yeah, he did.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. I never realized.
And then you get the Iron Sheik. He's a Jabroni. Anyway, he's from Iran. So okay. I like the Iron Sheik too.
Okay.
But I make you humble, you Jabroni. You respect the Iron Sheik, the legend.
Dude, I was into wrestling in like 5th, 6th, 7th, 8th grade, I think. And then I got too cool for it, which is sad because it's not like it's so fun. It's not, I don't think you should ever get too cool for it. But I was an idiot in high school. So I was into it with The Undertaker and Shawn Michaels, like the Heartbreak Kid. And I'm trying to think of some other guys.
It was a great time to enjoy wrestling.
It was good. Kids. Yeah, like late 90s.
It was the best. I mean,
late
it 90s, never was.
Early 2000s.
Never was hotter than that. Like more people were watching at that time.
Yep.
It's like MMA is now. Like MMA sort of draws in casual fans. So people who aren't necessarily into fighting or mixed martial arts or whatever, like it's an event. It's like, oh, we go to Buffalo Wild Wings and we watch the fights because it's on or whatever. And if you like football, you're probably like, you know, if you like contact sports and you're not grossed out by it or something. But there's people that are like casual fans, like they're not like hardcore fans, whereas now it's like wrestling used to be that way, but right now it's not really that way. It's only wrestling fans like wrestling right now. hopefully that can change and get back to where regular people who aren't really wrestling fans can like it too. Yeah. But guys like The Undertaker, you know, The Rock, like they drew people in
because
they were characters.
Yep.
But anyway, so we talked a lot about that up and down the roads. But so you guys had this first record come out, and then what was next after that? Did you get the road, or did you get married, or like what was the deal there? Because you weren't married at the time, were
so
you?
So we were not. We recorded it that summer and got engaged right after that summer in September, right? Mm-hmm. And so I finished my senior year. Jenny finished her junior year, but she had some extra credit, so she only had one semester left after we got married. We got married in the next summer, 2007, and stayed in Delaware for a year. Jenny finished up school, and after that year, decided to move to Nashville.
Mm-hmm. We wanted to move there for music, but we also lived like 10 to 15 minutes from Tyler's parents. And so we wanted to go be our own family, which was really good for us. Like now sometimes we're like, I wish we were near family. But at the time it was like a really good move. I think especially because we were so young when we got married. Like we thought we were like super mature and old enough to do that. And I mean, we were old enough to get married, but looking back, it's like, wow, we like grew up together. Like we were kids when we got married. So we came here summer of 2008 and Tyler worked at Starbucks and I went back to 1,000 Faces. And then, Tyler quit Starbucks in January of the next year and booked a little tour. And we left in March. We released another record and left in March for our little tour. And it was, you know,
this playing, was 2009.
Yeah, March of like 2009. Mm-hmm. And we played little coffee shops, you know, to 5 or 10 people, 3 people. Or we did like some house shows, which was fun playing for, you know, 20 people and had a couple like anchor dates that where we randomly got booked at like a couple colleges. And when we came back, we were like, well, we didn't lose money, so we should see if we can keep this going. And it worked out.
And for a little bit, when we came back from that tour, you were working at that store.
I worked there for about another month or two. Yeah.
Yeah. And that kind of, that sustained us, I think, through the summer. And then we booked another tour in the fall. Just kept booking tours and we are still booking tours.
Yeah. And we played a lot of house shows early on. And I think that was really helpful because people who come to house shows become like super fans, you know, they are, they're with you, especially if it's the beginning of your career.
Yep.
And we played so many of them for free and then people would buy a ton of merch cause they wanted to bring you home with them in a sense. And,
support,
especially at that point. I mean, really any point, I don't know. It's more important that people buy your music and, you know, keep up with you than spend $5 at the door, you know. It's a little more of a gamble, I guess, but it's to go in and play for free. But I felt like the money we made was a lot more important, you know?
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, because, I mean, they want to help you, and they want to help you more than $5 worth if they like you.
Yep.
Like, they're down to, you know, take care of, you know, put a lot more money than $5 in your pocket if they like you, and they want to support you. Because, I mean, music is important, you know? It's funny, like, I remember when the economy kind of took a dump several years ago and I looked around and I was like, huh, people are still coming to shows. And it just goes to show you like it was a priority to them to kind of get entertainment, to get entertained at some level, you know? And it was like to be working through that era and going, wow, like, you know, we shouldn't be drawing anybody. Everybody should be saving their money at home. But I mean, hey, it's just important to your family to have these experiences together. And when you talk about house shows, like, one, the next time you come back around, there's a house you can stay. So if you're playing at a club or a venue or a coffee shop, the next time you come around, you know you have somewhere to sleep because you made friends.
Yep.
And so tell me about that whole process of like being on the road. And I guess you just, did y'all go out in your car? Because it's only the two of you, right? So
when we first started touring, it was a Ford Taurus, right?
And it broke down every week that we were on the road.
It did. It broke down once a week for a month. But it was really cool how every time it broke down, something happened.
It got fixed.
Keep us going. Yeah. Really sweet.
So tell me about like making these friends and being like the whole transaction of booking a tour and going, well, let me call this person and see if they'll let us like sleep at their house. Because I think that's a funny part about it, you know, that just that indie musicians, indie bands or whatever have to deal with. You know, you're not sleeping in hotels. Like hotels are way out of your price range because we're trying to just get back and not have lost money. So $75 or whatever it would be to say to just sleep, that's not going to be justified.
Nope. So how did that come about?
Well,
that we started to
we were
stay at houses.
Tyler was pretty bold. I feel like we gave away a bunch of music on Noise Trade and we got email addresses and zip codes, and so we could look and see like where our fans were. And so basically, I mean, we called up people that we knew and wanted to play house shows or have them help us book a show. And then we would stay with them. But we also sent out emails to people in certain cities. And we were like, either these people are going to think that us asking them to help us put together a show is really cool, or they're going to be totally freaked out. But a lot of people thought it was cool. And so we ended up getting into some houses just by like reaching out to fans. And I think that that has been one thing that's, I mean, relationships as like an indie band are so important. And I think that's kind of what has fueled our career, is just forming like real lasting relationships with people. Most of the people we've played house shows with, maybe not most, but a good number, have become like good friends. Or even people we've met at some of those shows have become good friends. We just had friends live with us in this house for 3 months who were started as fans, you know, and turned into great friends.
Yep.
So.
I agree.
So tell me the difference, because I know you guys, when I first met you, you first had kind of made contact with Sarah Groves and ended up doing some stuff with her. And so tell me the difference of doing like the bus on the road versus doing the sprinter or the car or the whatever.
I could hardly hold it together.
Oh my gosh.
Well, the whole tour with her, that first tour in, was it 2011?
Yeah.
I remember falling asleep on the bus, or trying to the first night, because it was hard to adjust, and just being like, this is amazing.
Yeah, like this is real.
This
right now
feels so good.
And it's one of those things where like just the difference is insane. Like a bus is so much luxury. And I mean, there are always pros and cons to every part of being on the road. There are hard things even if you're traveling on the bus.
Oh yeah.
But for us, especially that time around, like we had no kids, we were the opener, so we had no responsibilities. So it was literally just like, you go to sleep on the bus, you wake up, you're at the venue, and you have all this free time. And it was fantastic. And, but it's weird because, you know, there are some people that never get the travel in a car and a van experience. Like they just go straight to the bus. And sometimes I want to be like,
and those people,
this is
are
amazing.
Spoiled.
You need to know how good this is.
Yeah.
You have no idea.
But we got to do a bus tour this past season for a few shows, and
that was awesome. It was with Sarah again.
Awesome.
I mean,
yeah, it's the only bus tour we've ever done. It has been with Sarah, and man,
there's such a difference.
It's amazing.
Yeah,
I thought it was funny because Callie, when she got on the road with Matt, you know, she like graduated a bus.
Yeah.
So she was on the bus still like crushing water bottles and freaking, you know what I mean? Like really being conscious of space, you know, in the trash can.
Yeah.
And they would laugh. They were like, yeah, I could tell you just got out of a van because you're still thinking like that.
Yep.
You know, and Bruno's the same boat. I mean, we used to sit around and talk about it and go like, oh, if we could just get a bus, this would be so much easier. But you got to make X amount of dollars per night to even justify the bus.
Yeah,
the bus is like, what, $1,000
so
a day or something,
man.
Crazy.
They're so, well, even with gas.
Yeah.
Getting 5 miles a gallon.
Yeah.
Versus 20 on the Sprinter.
Yeah.
You know, or
And it's not bad living in the Sprinter, but it's just if you don't know nothing else. But man, when you get that whole thing of like sleeping in the car and waking up at the venue, yeah, like, yeah. Yo, because the thing is, like, I was talking about this with Zandy on the previous podcast, but they were on a tour where everybody else was on a bus, but they were in a van. So the distances were like long as heck. So they were having to figure out west where it's wide open anyway.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, it's like you're trying to play catch up. It's like riding a bike in first gear, whereas everybody else is in fifth gear. Like you're pedaling way harder than everybody else to do the same thing.
We're about to do that, actually.
Yeah.
We're doing this Christmas tour. That's everybody else is going to be in a bus, and I think we'll have a driver. I think that's the only way we'll be able to get through it. Yeah. Somebody who can at least split driving with us.
Yeah. Are you doing the Sprinter or doing a car?
I think we're doing the Sprinter. Yeah.
Cool, man.
Yeah. We're excited about it.
West Coast dates?
No West Coast. Okay. Dates. So spread out that way. Our drives are going to be like, there's one from Orlando and the next day we play in Nashville.
Mm.
So
that's not terrible, but still like if you have to play, I'm like, there's a difference in an 8-hour drive and a 10-hour drive.
Yeah, there is.
Or a 4-hour drive or a 9-hour drive. Like there's such a humongous difference.
There is.
Like when it's in the sweet spot is if you're only driving like 4 hours a day.
Yeah.
And then you're killing it.
Yep.
But our rule, you know, was no, we don't want to play a show the same day if it's beyond 8 hours drive. Because you're worthless. By the time you get the sound check,
don't put on a good show.
Yeah, I mean, you can fight it and do the best you can, but it's just, it's a hot mess.
Yeah.
You know, and that's kind of
especially back to back. Like,
oh, yeah.
On a tour like that.
Because you're out all night. You're out till 1-2 in the morning sometimes.
Yep.
Just the nature of getting everything done. I mean, midnight is an early night to get it all done.
Yep.
You know, if the show doesn't start until 8 and then there's an opener or maybe 2 and then you play at 10 or whatever and it's like load out, merch, pack it up, wherever you're going, it's going to be late. Then you got to hop up early to make that 8 hours.
Yep.
So that's what gets tough about it. But so you get married, you got your records out and stuff and then, okay, tell me about how things change when you have kids and you're still doing this. You're still doing your gig. You're not like, well, we're not stopping it, you know?
Yeah. We basically feel like we're pretty crazy. Most of the time,
our friends who lived with us for the past 3 months came on a weekend,
like 3 days.
And we came back with them and they were like, you are,
they were like, we can't believe this is your life. Like you do this all the time. And we were like, I know, we're crazy. Because like even if it's not bad driving, like when you have kids, it just, oh my gosh.
Touring with
like
kids versus
thing,
touring without, it's night
it's just,
and day.
It's just so much more intense. I feel like when you came out with us, we never had the girls on a drive. And so you were very lucky to not have to experience that. And our girls are great.
Tour.
Our girls are great.
They are.
But it's just like a whole new dimension when you have a newborn out on the road and you're having to stop every 3 or 4 hours to feed.
Well, Taylor knows about that because
you do know about that Callie, aspect. Or,
Phoebe.
Yeah, that's true. When we had two kids, I mean, we thought one was kind of rough, but two is even like, so our last tour,
it's tough,
like big tour in the fall when we released Of This, I'm Sure. We had 10 people in our van, two of which were the girls, and we'd never traveled with two kids before. And we'd never traveled in the van before. And we'd never traveled with so many people before. So we were kind of just dumb in the way that we did it. Jane's potty training on the road. And Sarah is like a little baby. You know, it was just like,
Jane got motion sick a
Jane
few times.
Got, yeah, we found out that she gets
herself
really motion sickness. Like the first day, the whole band's in the Sprinter and Jane just like get sick.
Which we should say, plug for the C-bands thing, which I didn't believe, but they put pressure like in between your your two tendons on your wrist.
Jane
and
has
they
not
actually
been
work
sick since.
She's never thrown up since.
It's amazing because that was really bad. But I mean, like, you just have to deal with a lot of stuff. Like she actually got a stomach virus on the road, and so we had to deal with a 9-hour drive of that, you know, and it's just stuff like that with kids. Like unexpected things happen.
Yep.
You still have like the super late nights, but now your mornings are early. So it's just like, and your attention is so divided. So it's a lot. It's a lot. It's just a lot.
The most amount of time that I saw Jenny on that fall tour was on stage. Like the most amount of time that I actually got to look at her was when we were singing. And man, I don't ever want to do that again.
So I need you to, so tell me more, because we talked about this a lot, but y'all are still kind of exhausted from that, even when we were 6 months later. But like, I don't, tell me what you did, because we're going to plug the album too, but you recorded a live album,
yeah,
which sounds like a great idea.
Yep.
But what goes into that, that maybe the average fan doesn't know, is setting up the recording gear.
Yep.
Every yep. night.
Yeah.
And trying to piece together the best takes. Because you only get one take a night on every song.
Right.
So it's hard enough to even get to a place on time and set up your stuff and make it to dinner and whatever. But tell me about trying to set it all up and record it and traveling with the circus, like you were saying.
Well, at the beginning of the tour, setup was like, it took four hours or so, maybe even more. And towards the end, actually, everybody who was on the crew, so to speak, the players.
Which was the player, yeah, the band.
The players, really, got really good at setting it up. So I think it got set up within an hour and a half with those last few dates. And everybody was kind of chipping in, doing their part. So, yeah, it's just a whole different element, man. It's not that it didn't feel impossible. It just felt like, okay, we need to set aside more time.
Yeah,
for
we were setting aside like 3 hours probably.
And we found that at the beginning of the tour, that wasn't enough time. And towards the end, it was enough. But yeah, it was a big learning experience.
Yeah, and trying like managing so many people. I mean, we had we can look back at this tour now and laugh about it. And the shows were awesome. And playing with a band, I mean, it was just great. It, like the experience was so good. But we know that we failed pretty miserably at like handling every detail and like managing everybody, making sure everybody felt
was okay.
good and
yeah.
comfortable. And a lot of our players had never been on the road before.
Yeah.
So they didn't know what to expect.
The people that had, like Jillian had been on the road before, and she was so gracious and just like the most encouraging part of that tour, sure.
But like, we've just had a good laugh with other band members that we've talked with since hung out with. We're like, we're sorry. That was pretty miserable,
yep.
but we're still friends. So it's okay.
Yeah.
Well, I've had Jill and Noah both on the show
yeah.
since, and they both had nothing but good things to say.
Oh, that's good.
Because it's the effort, man. Like, they could see the effort.
They tried. They were drowning while they were trying.
Yeah.
Yeah, we went on a tour. The tour we did recently with Sarah, she and her husband Troy, like, sat us down one afternoon and were like, basically, they didn't say it, but what they were saying was, we can see that you're dying, like that you're drowning right now, and we want to help you figure out how to do this better. And we were like, thank you. Because we don't know what we're doing anymore, but it's still so worth it at this point. We'll see. We still love making music and playing and meeting people.
Well, it's crazy because like, it's almost like when you're a part of a documentary, when you go on a road with a band. Because you just basically are taking in their day in the life, you know, and you do it for a few days or a week or two or whatever.
Yeah.
And, you know how documentaries are, like, you got to have the drama part and you got to have the, like, okay, what's going on, the setup, the drama, and then you have the good part. And, like, sure, there's all this stuff, but, like, when you get to the show and you get through with it or whatever and you get to the table, like the merch table, and you see the interactions with the people and the artist, and yeah. it's been different to go out with like with you all, because like that transaction, I'm done, like after the stage is done, like I'm done.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm just watching now.
Yep.
But to see the people react to you all and to just tell you how much like your music has meant it to their lives is just, you go, okay, well, I can see why we all keep doing this, because that part is such an encouragement. And I don't know. That's the difference to me in like the real music that actually, you know, is going to matter in certain people's lives for a long time than just something that's like easy come, easy go, or like just a good pop song or whatever. Like, you know, you can like it, but then there's other music like what we're talking about now that were like people they attach themselves to.
Yeah.
And that's what you all, I feel like, have been able to be a part of.
Yeah, thanks. That's what we want to do, you know? We want to feel like we feel like our fans, we've all kind of grown up together. And so we're trying to write songs. The songs that we write, you know, you don't want to make like a super self-indulgent record. You want to write songs that, I mean, come from your heart and come from your life, but also like are for your fans, you know? So yeah, that's been like the best part of making music. And we try to like soak in those moments, and we have a little folder in our email where we put all of the emails that we get that are encouraging like that.
On a rainy day, we take a look at those emails and we're like, okay,
let's keep doing this. Let's keep going.
Keep making music. Yeah.
Well, cool. So I don't know. This whole thing is when you're in the middle of it, sometimes you're exhausted by it. But when you look back on it, you go, man, that was a heck of an experience.
Yeah.
You know, and I don't even know. Like, it gets nostalgic. It's very nostalgic. Even pulling up here and seeing that old van. Like, there he is. And you're like, Dallas, Texas, in the rain. You know, like, trying to load it up.
Yeah.
You know, that kind of thing. And you're just like, wow, man. But at the same time, it's such a fun. It's only a week of our lives when you think about it. It was only a week or something. Yep. But for that particular run, it's like... But I'm like, I'll never forget it. Like, you just don't forget the whole, you know, all for one and one for all kind of vibe that are the Three Musketeers deal.
Yeah.
When everybody's, you know, because there's just something special about being on a team or being in a band that I just can't quite put my finger on. It's just like human beings working together to do something that's kind of better than themselves, bigger than themselves, I guess, for other people, ultimately, either for their entertainment or for, you know, whatever it is that you're trying to teach. You know, sometimes can be through the music or what have you. And I don't know. That's the part, like playing music itself is fun. Like to hit the drums is fun, but that's kind of like the start. That's like what gets you to the game when everything else is really what it's actually about.
Yes.
I don't know. Mm-hmm. It's a trip, but so, well, what's next for y'all?
Well, we were going to book a bunch of shows this fall, but we decided that it'd be better to take it easy and do some college shows for the fall and the spring in light of the Christmas tour that's going to be intense.
We're releasing a Christmas record in November.
Yep.
We're super excited about it. We got to do it with Ben Shive, and it's like...
Oh my gosh.
It's so good, and he is so kind.
He's... Like,
we had an amazing time. I mean, it was really sad that it was over. Like, I enjoyed being there so much. And he makes great coffee as well. So that was also like, so many times at a studio, it's like a Keurig, and he made good coffee.
Well, and also so many studios are dark and mysterious and his studio was
really bright.
Actually, because of his studio, we painted our whole house in the same color as his studio. Because we love the way it felt. But the whole experience was like a warm and like edifying one.
And we're really happy with the way it turned out.
Yeah.
It's super classic. Lots of strings and schmaltz, and it's great.
We were drawing from our like Bing Crosby and some of the records we listen to, the classic records of Christmas that we grew up with.
So I'm going to meet Ben in a couple of days for the first time because he's coming to produce the rehearsal with Gray Havens.
Yeah.
So I was like a little nervous because it's like, here's a guy who's like really doing some cool stuff.
Yeah, he is.
And I'm like, I better know these dang songs backwards and forwards. But I went and like Googled him and read up about him and stuff. And sorry, Ben, it's a little creepy. Maybe I'll get you on the podcast after I meet you. But anyway, you know, he's been a part of some cool, cool stuff. And just, I don't know, guys, I don't know what it sets people apart like him, you know, but the type of producers, one, that like they make you feel so, I don't know, like artistic and musical or whatever, like they bring out the best in you. but also they become like your life coach in a way.
Yes.
And you're like, this guy, I would run through the freaking drywall for this guy. Like if mm-hmm. he said, do it, because you just, it just becomes that way.
Yeah. And he was the most encouraging and like nurturing, producer we've worked with. And, like I had a really great time tracking vocals, and usually tracking vocals is so stressful. And you feel like in the past I felt like so beaten down by it, you know, trying to get things perfect. And he just gives like great direction. And yeah, it was just super, super encouraging. It was awesome.
Well, that's cool. I think that's a great thing for y'all to do, you know, cause you and I, we've talked about it for this whole year. It's like, what the heck is the buzz and what happened to ours? You know what I mean? With our band, we feel that way, and we've had some discussions about it. But I think doing a record of any kind with a guy like him and going out and just putting content out, like that's what we got to do.
Yeah.
And you guys have done, in that amount of time, you had the Of This I'm Sure record come out. You've had the 10,000 Miles record come out, and now you're going to have a Christmas record. That's working.
All within a year, pretty much. Yeah.
Like that means that you're not sitting on your rear end. You know what I mean? Like, and if we're talking about wore out, why does the anti buzz happen? I think for us, it's just not putting out content, but like for y'all, like that is not the case. So you're moving away from all that is what I'm trying to say. You're moving away from that deal.
See what happens, man. Yeah, this release, actually, we released 10,000 Miles last week, and it was pretty encouraging. We did a Kickstarter for it, and we had about 400 folks get on board with that, and that was a year ago. So we gave them the record 6 months ago, and we thought, man, you know, maybe we'll just put it out and a few people will get it. But it did all right, and we've been excited to hear people's responses to it. It does, like, to me, it feels like you're at a concert.
Yeah.
Well, I always wanted to do one. I could never talk girls into it, but every band back in the day used to have one. And it was just like, it's part of how you sold the tour too. It was like, here's what it sounds like, you know? And it's a very vulnerable thing to do, to record a live record, because as we know, there can be some gremlins that show up, you know, because sometimes we don't play perfectly or whatever.
Sing perfectly.
Yeah. Right. But at the same time, like that's the human aspect of it. Mm-hmm. That can be so special, you know, and just being okay with it. And I don't know, I love a band that can have the guts to put out a live record. You know, that hits me. I like that.
Yeah, I love that, like, organic human aspect of it. I feel like so much is manipulated in studios now, and, like, the perfection is really expected from listeners, which is why auto-tune is used, like, pretty much
universally.
Yeah, I mean, it's just what you do now. And it's because the listener now expects everything to be pitch perfect. And there are, like, a handful of vocalists that are going to sing everything pitch perfect all the time, you know. It's not so I love live records in that sense, because it does sound like, oh, this is an actual human singing this song, and this is, you know, humans playing these instruments, and it's not all synced up and lined up perfectly. And yeah, I love that. I wish that regular records were a little bit more like that there was more room for error
and you know, it's everything comes back around. And you know, there's guys like the Black Keys that just strip it all down, just play what they play, and they get over huge, and it's just a matter of time. Something else will come along and strip it down as far as you can go, which if you look at, that's why I love bluegrass a lot. It's like, that's not really what we grew up on or anything, but we kind of ended up in that scene. And what you found out is these guys, they just get up there and play, and they sing, and they all sing, and they just, what you hear is what they're playing.
Yeah.
And that's sort of like at the most purest form, like what music is. It's acoustic instruments, you know, there it is. What you hear is what you got. And there ain't no tracks, there ain't no click, there ain't no none of that. And hopefully they're in tune. Sometimes you play your thing out of tune, though, especially if it's outside.
Yep.
You know, and bands like the Punch Brothers, it's like, come on, man. Mm. Like, that's a getting back to zero right there. That's how you get back to center. But, well, I appreciate y'all coming on and give me an hour of nap time here with the ladies. Selling out your nap.
Sarah's sleeping. I think Jane's still awake. But She just plays at this point.
Yeah, yeah, she ain't going to sleep. She's like, no. She's three now. Life is too valuable for me to sleep during the day.
Yep.
Gotta love that about kids. You got awesome kids. She's a dream. Hilarious. Rock star. She's a star.
Well, man, thanks for having us. Thanks for coming over.
Well, I wanted to see your home anyway.
Yeah.
And I can't wait to hear I didn't even know about the Christmas record.
Oh, cool.
Like, I really didn't. I especially didn't know that you were doing it with Ben. So, man, these conversations have been so good for me to keep up with everybody and what's actually going on. With all the social media in the world, you can still miss
so much
really big details.
Yeah.
You know, and who knows. But anyway, thank you all for investing in me and my brother all those years ago and sticking with us all. And for hiring me to come hit drums for you. Right. That
Thanks
was awesome.
For coming out with us.
Loved it.
Yeah, it was so good.
Yeah, we're doing that show up at the Union in Naperville.
That's the show?
Yeah.
I love that place.
Me too.
Dude, that's one of the best places in the whole country.
Yes, it is. We've had, I think we've had our favorite show there.
Really?
Yeah, like 3 shows ago.
One time, the last time we were there, we freaking had a, what are those things called? Fog machine. And set the fire alarm off before the show, and everybody had to get out because they couldn't cut it off till the fire alarm got department got there. And it was like snow. I mean, it was freezing, and we was all outside. And Bruno's like, "You think this is gonna set the fire alarm off?" And they're like, "It might." Woo! And there it went, and boom. So that was when somebody had lent us a fog machine, and eventually Bruno bought one. But it was hilarious. I love that place too. So we'll have a lot of fun there. And
Whitney, man, she's a cool girl.
Yeah, solid. And it's a great venue, well promoted. You know, come on, if you're in the Chicago area, go get hip to that
Chicago
venue.
And Edward and Jane are going to open. They're a duo out of Cincinnati. Their real names are Tim and Emily, but they go by their middle names. Edward
Interesting.
And Jane. Yep.
Who knew?
But they're cool. They're young and they.
Young and fired up.
Yeah, they are fired up.
Yep.
Got a good energy about them.
Well, cool. I'm excited. Thank you for the call. And thanks. Tyler actually put me over with the Gray Havens. That's how I got that job. So if you ever wonder how the music business works, that's how it works. Somebody has to risk their credibility and vouch for you.
Yep. Yep.
So hopefully I don't screw it up. Here we go, folks. Tune in next week to find out.
Oh, yeah.
That's the hook. We got to get them.
Right?
We got to get them to tune in next week.
Yep.
So, this has been fun. Thank you guys for listening to my little podcast and for subscribing. If you want to help the podcast out, go on to iTunes and write a small review of what you think about it, if you don't mind. It would be a big help. It helps me get more listeners and hopefully more credibility somehow, whatever that is. We're building this thing from the floor up, people. So, leave a review, 5 stars or whatever you thought of it. If you thought it was 1 star, just don't leave a review. Just let it be. Let it go on. Just let it float. But for Jenny and Tyler, I'm Taylor Jones. We'll see you next time.